Welcome to Bicycle Retail Radio, the bicycle industry podcast that brings retailers, vendors, advocates, and thought leaders to the mic for honest discussions about the latest issues facing retailers while taking an in-depth look at the person within the profession.
All right, Alessandro, Craig, welcome to Bicycle Retail Radio. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Heather, and thanks everybody that's listening.
Yeah, what an exciting opportunity for myself to sit down with the both of you. I am such a fan of iconic brands and the heritage that is so important to our industry, propelling us forward. So I'm excited to see Basso picking up steam again in the U.S. It's been our pleasure at the NBDA to work with Craig, the country manager, and now to have Alessandro Basso on the podcast, pretty freaking awesome. So this is going to be a great conversation. You guys are great.
Yeah, let's go for it. Come on.
Let's go for it. All right. So listeners, Basso is the last family-owned Italian brand that mass produces in Italy. That's pretty fantastic. And Alessandro, I'd like to just kick this off asking you about your unique journey into the world of cycling and how growing up in a family deeply rooted in the cycling industry with your father and uncle founding Basso Bikes has just influenced you. It's a big question, but man, you're in a big seat over there.
The seat is hot. So let me start off saying that when you grow up in a family-owned business in Italy, you're basically in the business from the moment you're born. There's so many companies that have a huge heritage that kind of go on inside the family, not only in cycling, but in, you know, cars, shoes, fashion. And that was my case too. So I had always something to do with the company since I was really, really little. And the evolution of getting into the company was kind of natural. I grew up as a big sport fan, doing numerous sports. I kind of got a bit serious into motorsports, doing motocross. That was a big passion I had through my teenage years. And then my shift into cycling came really as a passion for mountain bike downhill. So I raced for the Italian national team for a number of years while I was studying. And it was just really a great bridge for me to go from my passion for motocross and MX to downhill racing. At that time, I was studying engineering, mechanical engineering, because I've always been a fan of making stuff. I've always been a fan of kind of improving also products and things that I use. And mechanical engineering was a great pick for this. And so my racing career was always split between racing and studying. When I finished engineering, I kind of had to choose to, you know, go and try be a racer or get serious in the working world. And so I chose the second one. After a couple of internships, I entered a carbon fiber manufacturing company as an engineer and kind of grew up into that company, which gave me really a great experience on everything that is involved into carbon fiber manufacturing and really what you can do with this material that's so involved in bikes. Flash forward 3-4 years, I think, after I finished engineering, just things came up that kind of my help was needed in the company. Go forward 8 years, this is where I stand at the moment. So that's really quickly what brought me to this role. I had different roles inside the company. I went through an MBA program 3 years ago. And after that was done, I kind of took over the role as a CEO.
That is a fantastic background. And it sounds like you've really just embraced your role throughout growing up and into the role you're in now. So I know that the family has background in both cycling and motorcycle protection gear. And you were speaking just a little bit on your involvement in motocross. So were you involved in the motorcycle protection gear side of things as well then?
No, maybe a crash tester when I was when I was crashing, but no. So that side of the company belongs to my mother's side. And my uncle is bringing that on with huge success. When I entered, let's say, the family business, I was involved straight away with bikes, which is my father's side of the business, because that was the company that needed my help. Let's put it that way.
Such a tremendous opportunity to be part of a family with such a heritage. How are you feeling? How are you, like, no pressure, but like you're in charge of, this is an iconic brand with a lot of heritage and it's a turbulent time in the industry. So I always try to put myself in other people's shoes, and I would be, I think, excited, but driven, super driven. You seem very driven.
Well, let's say that for sure, the heritage is an important part. From my side, I don't like to, let's say, fully rely on the heritage. I think the world is so fast now and is evolving. Just see what's happening in these days, that you cannot just sit on the heritage and say, this is who we are, because we've been doing it for so long. So I try to always keep the best part of the heritage. I'm glad that in these times, I'm, let's say, on the young side as a CEO. So I have a lot of energy. I have a lot of brain energy. And together, my team here at the company, it's really a 50-year-old company, but the group of people that work with me is super young. So we're able to tackle, let's say, the hard parts and opportunities quite fast. As you mentioned, you know, being a privately owned company brings more pressure for sure, because kind of everything is on the line in difficult moments. But, you know, we have a clear vision of what we want to do and who we want to be. And that makes it much, much easier, you know, being able to decide really in a closed team and not having to bring together too many stakeholders and have super long meetings where decisions are never taken. So I think acting fast and being smart is the key at the moment. But do I feel pressure? Yes, for sure.
Sorry to ask you that tough question. I have such a sweet spot in my heart for brands with rich histories, having worked for Belgian brand for some time. And I can tell, you know, pulling on the knowledge depth of the people that are probably on your team and just the history of just having done things cutting edge, staying on top of technology, bringing forth quality products. There's a lot there, and it takes a strong drive, a strong motivated person to be in that driver's seat. So that's why I'm so excited to talk to you today, because I'm just watching what you're doing and I'm just totally impressed, and it's awesome. I'd like to dive a little bit more just into the origin of Basso and the history. So founded by your father and your uncle, can you give us a little bit more of that story?
The brand was founded in 1977, but let's say 3 years prior to that. So my uncle has been a very successful racer, Marino Basso. He was world championship on road in 1972. And for the 70s and 80s, he was one of the fastest sprinters that was in the world road racing. My father was an average racer. He started off as a mechanic and then kind of decided to take over this thing of learning how to weld steel frames and starting producing bikes. So for the first, from 74 to 77, Basso as a brand was not there, but my father was already welding frames for third parties and kind of learning the job. But then in 1977, Basso was established officially, and that's how it came along. So my uncle was always the one racing, and my dad was the one actively starting the company and working in the company. And, you know, we've always been, as my father started, very focused on product, because my father started as a welder and was really welding frames in his mother's garage. So that's where Basso started, in a small city in the Vicenza province in northeast Italy. So that's where we started, and kind of our roots are still very deeply, as you mentioned, here in the area, because having a lot of production here, our carbon fiber production is just a couple miles away from where the company started, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. That was something when I was doing my research for today's conversation. So you have decided to maintain production in Italy rather than outsource. Just some of the why behind that for you? Is that just to maintain that quality level?
I think it's not a matter of quality, really, because I think production Far East or anywhere else in the world, you can reach very high degrees of quality. The main reason is because we always wanted to keep our know-how and our technologies inside the company. I think the moment you outsource a key part, that is, the frame is the heart of the bike, the moment you outsource the production of this part, you are in a way or another giving away technology. And we are, as I said, really deep into what is the product and what is the quality. And that's why we decided to maintain this. It's you know, your next question could be like, how can you produce so many frames in Italy? But it's a learning curve that started in 1977. So it's been 50 years in developing, in the making. And up to today, you know, we have a full team that is just involved in how to better the processes, how to make them more time effective, what technologies can we bring in production. That's the key thing. And, you know, how does this translate to the customers and when a person buys a bus? So, you know, what I always say is that when you buy a bike today and in 5 years, you want to know something about your bike, with the serial number, we are able to basically tell you, let's speak about the part of the bike, the bottom bracket. When 5 years ago, who built the bottom bracket? What time is it? What day was it? How much was the temperature in the lab that day? How much was the humidity? We can really track everything from, you know, when the bike started its conception inside the company. And what this means is controlling quality, being able to service warranties, and yeah, a number of other things.
Registration is officially open, and we want you to join us for the second annual NBDA Retailer Summit, May 22nd and 23rd in Bentonville, Arkansas. Our 2024 program features two dynamic days of presentations, panel discussions, and breakout sessions aimed to unite retailers and suppliers in conversation. Tickets include an event gift bag, tailored educational events, networking cocktail event and select meals, early access to the Bentonville Bike Fest, not to mention ample riding time on world-class trails. You won't want to miss it, so don't. Get registered today at nbda.com.
I'm just imagining, too, your community, the people that you're employing, they must feel so proud to work for you and to be part of such an amazing, amazing thing to bring and keep production so close to home. When we talk about the brand Basso, you know, often when we talk about bicycles in general, we can look at the frame material. We can talk about the weight of the bike, the ride quality. Are there a couple attributes that Basso is really known for when we talk about ride quality or why buy a Basso?
Yeah, so I think what you mentioned, the ride quality is an attribute that we really focus on, because we tend to not speak about, you know, technical points, you know, weight, stiffness, these kind of data. We always try to be in the shoes of the customer who's buying a bike. You know, how does weight relate to how the bike is riding? How does this amount of stiffness on this place of the bike relate to riding? So in reality, what really differs, I think, Basso to most of the companies out there is really how the bike rides and how the bike is thought to be ridden by a specific kind of customer. So we really segmentate our models based on the customer that's going to ride it and focus on what does a person that is going to buy a, let's say, $5,000 or $7,000 carbon gravel bike, what is this person looking to feel on the bike? What kind of experience does he want to have on the bike? And that's, I think, what has brought to the fact that, you know, the people that buy a Basso, the riders that buy a Basso, become the greatest advocate for the brand. You know, that's the best, you know, word to mouth is the best marketing you can have. And we really relate on that a lot.
Yeah. So for our listeners, I would implore you to go to bassobikes.com. You can review the website, all the bikes that they have there. Over 52 countries with a dealer network of over 2,500 dealers. I mean, that's fabulous. Congratulations. And I'm very excited that you're back in the States. I think definitely more retailers should connect with a brand that has heritage, that has a story that you can build a community around. Alessandro, what are some of your goals for the brand moving into 2024 and beyond?
You mean for the US or worldwide?
Let's go worldwide. Let's go big.
Let's go big. So in general, the goal for me in this complicated times is always to, first of all, defend the brand. Sometimes I say that the brand is going to save us all. So I really want to try and keep Basso in that sweet spot where the dealers and the end consumer sees our product as a product that they really want to reach, they want to carry. in the end, the bike has my surname on the down tube. So what I have to do is really protect product and make sure that it's placed correctly in the shops, that it's presented, that the rider that wants to buy a Basso has the best experience in our IBDs when he goes and buys the product. So that for sure is the number one goal in kind of complicated times. In general, worldwide, what we are trying to do is really to expand our dealer network and grow with the dealers. I mean, we're going to speak about this later, but for me, the dealer plays a key role in the whole strategy of Basso. If we don't have shops that are passionate about the brand, that know about the brand, and that put the brand on really the sweet spot of what a customer should buy, we're not going to go anywhere. So for me, that's the really key thing, is to consolidate relationship with our IBDs. We know times are rough in some parts of the world, but we really want to stick with, you know, trying to protect our IBDs and make sure that their business goes a long way with our business.
I'm really thankful to hear that. And I'm thankful that Craig Stein, your country manager, could join us on today's call, because it's so important to have someone at the realm of, you know, leading the charge, leading the connectivity with retailers that truly does care. And I've been privileged to work with Craig for over the past year and get to know him better and have him join our NBDA driven retailer events. And he has really shown up and been a true advocate for the retailer. So Craig, thanks for joining today. I just want to get some background. Alessandro, I'm sure you were very inquisitive when you were searching for the correct person to be your country manager. And Craig and you, how did you guys connect? How did that come about?
Thank you, Heather. So I'd approached Basso early in 2022. And at that point in time, I liaised with the export director, and he was looking for somebody to service the southeast of the United States. And I was based in Florida. And so the relationship started there, but I soon realized that there was a lot of scope for the brand, that the brand was really, we had brand equity, we had brand recognition, and I really believed in it. And I realized that there were certain aspects that were lacking. And I approached Alessandro, and he realized that as well, and at the conference, and placed his confidence in me. And together we worked on a model where we can present a model to dealers that includes a dealer as a partner. I think that one of the strongest selling points, or one of the strongest points of our relationship, is that we want to partner with dealers. We don't simply view dealers as doors to sell to. A committed dealer is a successful dealer, and a committed brand is a successful brand. And the only way that you succeed is by getting that commitment. And that's essentially how our relationship started, was essentially by me committing to the brand, by the brand committing to me, and by us committing to dealers to create the best outcomes.
Well, I'm excited to see the partnership and to have you join us on the podcast today. So we're back in the States, and I know that it's a dealer direct program, and this dealer direct program is different and benefits both dealers, the brand, and the end consumer. Would one of you mind giving me a little bit more information about what that looks like?
So the dealer direct program, Heather, has certain objectives. The first objective is to link the dealer directly to the brand. And the way we do that is by giving the dealer access to the B2B, by giving the dealer a all-in landed wholesale price. So there's no additional fees. The price that the dealer pays is his final price door to door. And we air freight the product from the factory direct to the dealer. And by also giving the consumer a price point that is market related. So by taking the distributor out of the model, we are able to be very competitive on pricing, and we don't ever need to discount the product. So the product retains its value. A consumer that purchases one of our bikes doesn't have to fear that it'll be marked down by X percent next week or next month. He knows that he has value retention in the product. What that also does is it enables us to build a very effective dealer network, and that enables the dealers to service customers, which in turn has the knock-on effect of being able to sell more product. And that, together with working with dealers on a one-to-one basis, identifying what are the dealers' needs and satisfying those needs is the benefit to the Dealer Direct program.
Thank you, Craig, for that explanation. And for our listeners, I'd like to just implore you to take a moment and appreciate what Craig is saying, because being someone who worked on the supply side for so long, trying to figure out a solution to high freight costs, bikes that end up discounted because of inventory needs, that when you bring over mass quantities, it really does make to be quite a complex issue when you're looking to bring premium products from other countries to dealers, to consumers in the US. And I think that this new way that you have, this Dealer Direct solution, will allow us to continue to serve the needs of our cyclists, of our customers, while giving retailers and riders best pricing protection. And it just serves to be a good catalyst to make sure that we ensure quality product at great prices and relationships are protected. So I congratulate you guys. This is not an easy feat, but it does require a strong relationship with the retailer to be really in tune to the way they communicate with the brand, and also the way that the retailer communicates with the customers, because there's lots of pieces falling together here to ensure we deliver on time and provide that best customer service and satisfaction. So, Alessandro, just tying back over to working with retailers, when we're imploring retailers to reach out to Craig to consider working with a brand like Basso, why is it so important in your mind that retailers think about bringing in and working with iconic brands and really making the connections to bring unique products to riders?
Yeah, so I think now in this moment, more than ever, it's a big opportunity for the brand, but for the retailers only to start this connection. I think Basso especially is in a unique moment because, think about it, there is no stock of Basso on the shop floor. There is nobody that is complaining that they have too much stock on the shop floor. So there is nobody that is trying to liquidate this stock. So we're starting off a blank page when basically the whole of industry is fighting for clearing this out. I think what we want to do in the US is really just bring the quality, to bring the benefits of working straight with the factory. Think about the fact that on our top level models, you can fully custom build a bike. Let's say you are a bike fitter, you sell a bike to a customer with 170 cranks, 100 stem and 42 handlebars. The bike will come exactly built from the factory like this. There's going to be no waste of time or components on switching products because the bike was sitting on a shelf and is getting shipped over as it is. So this, I think, is a big opportunity. And second of all, is because I think that discounts are starting to be not effective as they were amongst the consumer. Because for me, a bike is a piece of equipment that is not necessary. You don't eat a bike. So the bike is always something that you aspire to have. You dream of having a bike. And so up to a point where there is no discounts, I think the customer is looking to choose to put his money where he sees the value. And having a production, having a price that is stable, and having a price that is stable, but is not over the roof. You know, we, as a strategy, the company tries to relate into a category that we call commercial premium. So we will never be the cheapest bike company on the market, but we want to really bring the value for the price. And I think this is something that Basso can really bring to the market in this moment and kind of capitalize on this opportunity. We're seeing this in Europe a lot. We have increased our number of IBDs massively in Europe at the moment. And in the end, it's just going back to what Craig is saying. And retailers are a key focus of the business model of our company. We are not a company that wants to sell directly, and that's another business model. We, in the end, are bike and frame producers. We need the dealers to be able to sell the bikes, and we need committed dealers, trained dealers, to be able to speak the right language to the customers.
You hit on so many great points there. And I think that personalization, that customization, where the retailer can get the right crinkling and deliver a product to the rider that's ready to go, is truly something that's very unique and that's resonating with today's customer. Yeah, the discounts are really not working anymore. And we have to think beyond that and above that. And bikes are luxury items. So I think that today's rider is looking for something unique. And this opportunity for retailers to work with a brand that does truly set itself apart and offers so many options for personalization and customization, and then just that rich, deep history, which we all want to be connected to something, I think that's really an amazing opportunity. So you touched on so many great points there. Craig, just outside of engaging with retailers, is there any ways that the brand is engaging with the cycling community beyond just selling products?
There's a number of ways, Heather. The first way that we engage with the community is really marketing initiatives that are driven by the head office. And there's two that are applicable to the United States. The first one is the Enough Cycling Initiative, which is a group of gravel cyclists that will be participating at certain gravel events across the United States this calendar year and interacting with dealers. So we will get that calendar and the reps will then liaise with the dealers and actually facilitate that interaction. That interaction with the dealers goes right down to the customer level so that consumers are able to interact with that team and with those riders. The second initiative is called Away Message, and that will be launching on the West Coast of the United States. And that is an initiative where it is a group of riders that are semi-serious, that interact with dealers, that interact with other riders, and that really promote a collection of brands, including Basso, but look to create social interaction and fun type events. And so that focuses the brand for the products that they ride, and it also enables the dealers that they interact with to promote certain categories, like, for example, road cycling. We see a bit of a decline in road cycling in the United States. And our objective is to try and build those relationships, build that awareness, and build that community.
Those sound like some fantastic events and plans that you have. I see road bikes, gravel bikes, e-bikes, commuter bikes. Are all of those models available in the US market? I see them on the website.
The entire catalog is available. A product that you see on the website will have the US dollar pricing on it. And that product will be available from any of the dealers that are listed on the dealer locator. If the dealer does not have the product on the floor, the dealer is able to place an order on the B2B, and we're able to fulfill that requirement.
The NBDA values the importance of deep interpersonal connections, and our Retailer Summit is designed to be a catalyst for just that. Attending the Retailer Summit in May ensures you meet the right people who know the bicycle industry, respect your business, and want to help you grow, both personally and professionally. It's an easy way to take your business to the next level through networking, engaging with panelists and speakers, problem solving with your fellow attendees, followed by ample riding time on world-class trails. Go to nbda.com/retailersummit for more information and to get your tickets today.
Alessandro, are you planning to come to the States at any point, take part in any of these gravel events? Or I'm not seeing a mountain bike on, you know, so I don't know. I got to ask you about that, being a mountain biker myself.
Well, I'm going to be in the US in a week or two, but it's too cold to ride where I'm going at the moment. But yes, for sure. I mean, I love the country. I did a short master's degree at UCLA, and I've raced in the US also at Sea Otter back in the day. So I come there quite a lot, and I transformed myself a bit into a road and gravel, but I always sneak in some mountain bike races. I like marathon races now, cross country. I like more long stuff, but yeah, for sure. We should go riding whenever I come over.
That's what I'm saying. I'm with you. So Craig, we are now early 2024. I know you've been working for some time now just to get Basso back into the States. Any stories you could share of retailers who are having some early success?
Yes, what we try and do, as I mentioned, is try and form partnerships. But part of that is not just saying it. A big part of that is actually doing it. And so the question that arises is, how can we increase your turnover? How can we service your clients better? And a prime example is a dealer that's based in Tampa who was selling frame sets. This particular dealer markets himself as a custom type fitter and bike builder. And the problem that he was having was that he had a few frames laying around his showroom, but he just felt that he could get more traction if he had more of a range. We felt he could get more traction if he displayed them in a better fashion rather than just simply hanging them above the workbench. And so what we did is we worked with him. We branded a wall in his showroom. He dedicated a specific area in his showroom to the brand that's exclusive to the brand. And it became a focal point. And what that did for him is he was able to stock more frames because he was displaying them in the correct fashion. He started to stock a few complete bikes. And over the past 6 months, his turnover on the brand has increased by 15%. Now, a 15% increase in revenue in times when a lot of dealers are telling you that they are not bike sales comes down to, I think he's done really well. I think that's quite a good achievement. And so that's just one example. Other examples are working with dealers to appoint brand ambassadors, where there's, for example, a mountain biking team linked to the store to assist that team to get them onto our product and to actually make them brand ambassadors and work with the dealer to get them to races and to get the exposure, not only for the brand, but for the dealer.
Sounds like you're really going the extra mile to work one-on-one with your partners to determine how they can best support the brand and how the brand can best support them. And that makes a true impact. So kudos to you for that. Alessandro, I wanted to come back to you. I had taken a note here from our conversation earlier when we were talking about the touch points of the Basso brand that really resonates with retailers. And you talked about some success that Europe was having, I think, on the personalization or customization. Can you expand on that a little bit of what you're seeing in other countries that might be applicable to the US market in the short time?
Yeah, so for sure. We see that, you know, first of all, in the majority of Europe, we apply the model that we have in the US. And it's been going on in Italy for 20 years and Spain, France, Belgium, Holland, Germany, where we have a subsidiary for 4 years now. So what we're seeing at the moment, as you were saying, actually, you know, that bike is a luxury item and the customer is willing to make it special and make it tailor-made for him. And so being able to really, you know, access the factory gives the shop the possibility to offer a number of options that it would be difficult to offer, let's say, with a standard product. And we see this coming more and more our way. And for us, of course, having the whole production in-house means that ideally we can make, you know, every bike special and every bike unique one-on-one. Then there's logics of, you know, being efficient in production. So we have to kind of slim down a bit the whole universe, but we can bring it really far to what it is, making a product unique for each customer.
And then if I could ask you one other question, and I hate to say these words, but some people are saying that the road bike customer base is declining and that maybe gravel is growing. And I'm sure you have the data that shows you, you know, where the traffic is on your website. Do you agree with that statement? And then if you do, how can we get that road bike customer back in the door? Give us the magic answer.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, gravel is eating up a bit of the road market. What we're seeing in general is that kind of the newer riders that have approached cycling are riders that are really focusing on the experience of riding. They are not that into who's racing, what's the fastest, what's, you know, the pure performance. But, you know, performance can be being super comfortable for somebody that wants comfortable or being fast for somebody that wants to ride fast. And I think gravel kind of alleviates all these expectations that you have when you buy a road bike. But what I'm seeing now is that, you know, having these road bikes, they're a bit all road, as we call them, that, you know, people can really do a 1 hour ride after work and do a long road trip. And developing this experience is bringing back customers to the road. And we really believe in this. With Paso as a brand, our strategy is not to speak solely about performance and racing. We want to speak about experience a bit, as I was telling you before, that, you know, we try to really develop the product tailor-made for the different scenarios of riders that are going to be on it. But yeah, I think from our side, we don't see a decline in road. But if you take, let's say, the full market, there is definitely some gravel eating up road. But for the moment, we're still doing 4 models of road and 2 models of gravel. So that gives you a bit of the perspective of where the company wants to invest.
I would love to see the industry focus on sexy road bikes again. I mean, there's nothing like getting on a perfectly balanced, sexy road machine with a nice pair of wheels and get out there for that hour or two ride. And I mean, maybe we need to put out like a trip to visit the factory and do some riding with our special Basso purchase. I don't know. It's something really, really unique. Craig, what are you seeing when you're talking to retailers? Are you hearing, I don't know, a decline in road market? Or what would you implore to our listeners to get more road cyclists back in their doors? A little challenge for our listeners.
I think that you need to look at it, Heather, from the point of view of segmentation. Gravel is certainly taking from the road, but I also think that you need to segment it and say which riders from the road are moving over to gravel and what are the dealers doing that actually shifts the consumer. And allow me to give you an example. At the lower end, when you've got a consumer that walks into the store and wants to get started, a lot of times it is easier to put that consumer onto a gravel bike because of the function of the gravel bike, because of the ease of the comfort of, and the customer actually takes to the gravel bike in an easier way than what they may necessarily take to a road bike, especially if you look at ladies, the thicker tires, the comfort aspect, the ability to go on road and off road. There's a lot of benefits. Whereas at the top end, the customer that comes into the store who is looking for a race experience and a top-end bike may very well stick with the road. So I think that there's been an element of cannibalization with that. If you speak to certain dealers, and a prime example is you speak to Clark down at Victory, mm-hmm. he'll tell you that he sells, for example, 100 gravel bikes. And of those 100 gravel bikes, 60 of them never see gravel. Why? Because the customers prefer that comfort aspect. The gravel bikes seem to be more appealing for that general use. And so I think for a dealer, it comes down to satisfying the customer's needs. And for brands, I think it comes down to how we market, how we want the customer to perceive those gravel bikes versus the road bikes. Ultimately, it lays with the dealer.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to challenge our listeners, our retailer listeners, to connect with Craig and Alessandro to explore bringing Basso into your store, to offering the thrill of an amazingly built, iconic road brand with gravel and e-options, commuter options to your customers. The dealer locator shows me that there's lots of opportunity for retailers in the U.S. to get working with a brand who is here truly to support you and the growth of the brand in your community. Craig, what are the next steps for someone who is listening that is a retailer who wants to connect with you to work with the brand?
Any retailers that would like to join us are welcome to email me on craig.stain@stardew.it. I will also provide my cell number. They're welcome to call me at any time. So I can leave all of that detail with you and you can include it in the podcast.
Yeah, we'll put it into the show notes. Alessandro, just thinking forward to the future, I don't want you to spill like your secrets, but anything coming down the pipeline that we might want to be looking out for or could expect from the brand in the near future?
Yeah, well, in terms of product, we have 2 big launches coming up in March that are going to, you know, really, I think, help our IBDs to speak about new products and don't speak about new discounts. Because in this moment, there's really not a lot of new product being launched into the markets. So we want to push that. In terms of, as a company, we have some huge investments planned for the end of the year with a new production that is going to bring us up to a capacity of 45,000 frames produced in Italy every year, which basically is doubling the production we have at the moment. And I'd like to invite everybody to join this new, let's say, cycling hub we're going to open in our hometown in Bassano del Grappa in the northeast of Italy. It's going to open on the week where Giro d'Italia is going to ride past our hometown. It's a hotel, it's a restaurant, it's a showroom, there's rental bikes there, and it's really a great way to express the brand and show everything that the brand can do. So yeah, I'll make sure I send you more details on this, and it's going to be brand new. We're really excited about this.
Oh, congratulations. Please do share details. We'll be happy to put that out to our network. I'm so thrilled to hear that there's growth for the brand in the future and just to see what opportunities lie forward. I can't thank you both for the work that you have done to bring the brand back to the States. And I truly hope that, Craig, we connect with retailers and we'll see more Basso bikes on the road. For your partnership with the NBDA and for showing up and being part of the conversations with retailers to form positive solutions to keep our industry pushing forward. Thank you. Alessandra, I know that this was a lot today on your calendar to pull you in for this podcast, but I'm happy I got an opportunity to connect with you personally. And thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Heather. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, Heather. And thank you for everything that the NBDA does for the industry. It's well received and well appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Bicycle Retail Radio. This podcast is designed specifically for the bicycle industry, dedicated to strengthening our retailers and cycling community. If it is your first episode, we urge you to take the time and listen to our past episodes. Support the show by first subscribing, then share your favorite episode online with friends. You can go one step further and leave a review. It helps members of our industry find our podcast. Special thanks to NBDA Development Director Rochelle Scouten for editing and promotional graphics. Music provided by Joel Picard.